Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. And for most of us, welcome to a slippery deck, steps, backyards, parking lots, whatever. You've heard Jim talking about how it is slippery in lots of places. Maybe a few not, and I see it's raining again. So anyhow, wherever you are, maybe best to stay there. And if you have to go out, of course, you've been told, be very, very careful. It gets you instantly. So, as many people are not going to work today and are home, I'm wondering what you're doing. Well, this is a great opportunity to do some cooking, some baking, perhaps, that, you know, you just don't have time for normally. Well, maybe this would be a good day to do some baking. Well, I have a couple of, 10 common cooking mistakes, and a couple of them relate to baking. More of them also apply to meats and frying and that sort of thing. And most of these you know, but maybe you don't know or don't remember kind of the behind why that is true. And the first mistake they talk about is not preheating your pan, your skillet, whatever, and this would be related to browning. Probably mostly meats, but it could be other things too. If you put a cold food into a cold oil in a cold pan, the food just absorbs the fat before it gets hot, and it doesn't have good results. You have a heavy oily food. So preheat the pan for a couple of minutes. Don't walk away. You know, you say, I'll be right back. Don't walk away because it gets hot pretty fast. Add the oil and then wait until you see it sort of shimmer. And if you move it a little bit, you can see that sort of shimmer. And then add room temperature food. Now, that's something I often forget. You know, we don't want to take meat out of the refrigerator and leave it laying around the counter very long. But you could, you know, at the start of getting all the ingredients out or getting the utensils out, maybe put the food out on the counter to start getting to room temperature. So preheating helps keep food from sticking also. So if your food is still sticky, maybe it means it hasn't browned enough and wait a little bit longer. But getting that all at not such odd temperatures will help get the browning done and help keep the food from absorbing extra oil. Now, kind of a related one to that is a mistake is crowding in the pan. When you went to speed up cooking, and I know I've done this, you know, I like to brown stew meat, for instance, before I put it in the stew. And, you know, I have a pound or two, and that's going to take a while. Well, yep, but it's best if you give a little space around the food and work in batches. Why? Because when it starts heating, the food releases moisture. And if there's too much food in the pan, you end up steaming instead of searing. And you know, you haven't accomplished much if you end up steaming it rather than getting that nice sear. And again, prevents a lot of oil from being absorbed into the food. Another one, and again, it relates to this same kind of thing. Your mistake is being afraid of heat. If you cook on heat that's too low, your food might never get brown, which means you'll miss out on that flavor that you get that browning adds. That's one of the reasons to brown. I think that browning, and again, I'm thinking mostly meat, but it could pertain to a lot of other foods, that the browning looks good. It makes us kind of think it's going to taste good, but it also provides some extra flavor. So start with a skillet or your pan that's hot enough. Don't start putting the food in when the pan is not yet hot. And of course, we're not talking about overheat. And again, another one related to meat, that then we're going to change to more like baking. A mistake is not letting cooked meat rest, because cutting into meat right after cooking discharges its juices. And as meat increases in temperature, so does its kinetic energy, causing its fibers to vibrate, contact, and expel the juices. So, when you let meat rest after cooking, about 10 minutes, and it depends sort of on the size of the piece of meat, It allows the muscle fibers to relax and reabsorb nutrients. So the result is a lot more juice and flavor exploding into your mouth instead of onto your plate. So those are all kind of related to mostly meat, but could be some other fish, could like be potato patties, could be a number of things that relate to heating, especially with oil, especially in a skillet or a similar pan. Now, what about some baking things? Well, as I mentioned earlier, if you're at home and you decide you want to bake something and you look at the recipe and you go, oh, I'm missing an ingredient. Well, there may be some things that you can't overcome. But for many ingredients, there are substitutes, such as honey for sugar, or you can substitute, of course, skim milk for whole milk. You could substitute some white flour for whole wheat or vice versa. And how do you know whether that's going to be successful? Well, of course, experience helps. But if you really have a question, I hope you have a resource there. One of the resources would be some of our basic cookbooks, like the Better Homes and Gardens and Betty Crocker, have substitute tables in them to give you advice. And, of course, if you have a computer, have access to that, just search for, you know, what are substitutes for baking powder, for instance, and you should find a long list of substitutes that could be helpful to you. Another one is related to scooping flour. I think Miss Nene and I did a program on this one time, but I've seen people dip the cup in, dip it in so you're really scooping in that, and then shake it. Whoa, you're probably going to get at least 2 tablespoons extra flour in there, more than the recipe called for. So probably turn out being kind of dry and not mixing together very well. So, of course, you can sift it. I don't think that many recipes call for sifted flour anymore. That means you have to have a sifter or a sieve or something to do that. But at least you can kind of fluff it up with your spoon or your cup that you're going to be using to measure, and then spoon it into the cup. And, of course, then using a knife. One of the first things we teach 4-H kids, and hopefully we teach other people in cooking, is you don't just pile it off on the top and leave it. You smooth the top off, probably with the back of a kitchen knife. That's the easiest thing to do. Kind of a basic first thing to learn when you are doing baking and measuring. Another one kind of related to that is a mistake is over-mixing batters. Now, this depends on what you're making, but for instance, muffins, pancakes, some cakes, a number of things, say, the instructions say, stir until just combined. Well, then you see some little lumps in there, and you're going, oh, I better keep stirring. Well, no, actually a few lumps are key to light and tender baked product goods, so stir just until combined, and of course the reason is that as you stir the wheat or other kinds of cereals that have gluten in them, when you stir, it develops the gluten, which makes things get tough. Now, in case of bread, yeast bread, you want to develop the gluten, but in the case where you're just stirring some of these things, you don't want to. So follow the instructions, and if it says just combine, then don't worry about seeing a few little lumps in there. Another one is not related to baking, but pasta. Are you a pasta fan? I've been told, and perhaps you've been told, if you add some oil to the water, it will keep it from boiling over. Well, first of all, that usually doesn't help. Secondly, it's not the way to cook pasta. You want pasta not to be slick when you put it on the plate and put the sauce over it. You want it to be a little rough. That's so the sauce will stick. So these people give, and these are all good cooked chefs and so on, give some advice. First of all, don't pour oil into the water prior to cooking, and it won't really keep the pasta from sticking together. The way to keep pasta from sticking together is put it in plenty of water have a big enough pot that you don't have to worry about boiling it over, and then stir it a couple of times just to give it a little bit of stir so you know it's not sticking together. Secondly, don't rinse your pasta after it's cooked. That's another thing that we used to be told, is to rinse that pasta so you get all of that starch off. Well, actually, the starch that's on there is a good thing when you're adding sauce to it, because it helps to thicken the sauce, and the sauce will stick to the pasta better, so it's not just running off the pasta onto the bottom of your plate. And third, and this is a personal preference, but all of the chefs, and you read it all over, is to cook it to that al dente stage. That means that it's not soft and mushy. You don't want it to be chalky in the center. You need it almost to the soft stage, but you want it still to have a little bit of firmness, again, for the best flavor and the mixing it with the sauce. Well, another thing that came to mind here, or it also is in this, is don't be afraid of salt. You know, we are warned so much not to eat salt. Well, a lot of the salt we eat comes to those pre-prepared foods, not necessarily what we put on the food as we eat it. It doesn't mean you load it down with salt, but a little bit of salt really does make your tongue just kind of pick up on the flavors. And now we have so many choices of salt that it adds some interest, but it may add some confusion also. Remember, there's good old table salt, but added to that are all kinds of coarse salts at reasonable prices. Now, if you want to get pricey, you can buy flavored, smoked, special, can-gathered salt. That might be as much as $15 a pound as compared to less than $1 a pound for table salt. So take a look at what your options are. Maybe learn a little more about the salt choices you have and operate accordingly. So, until next time, here is a food thought, kind of gross, really, but it's true. Chickens are the only animals you eat before they are born and after they are dead.